I'm Rachel Barenbaum. You're listening to Check This Out from New Hampshire Public Radio. Next up, the book biz. This is where we look at the forces shaping what gets written, published, and read today. We are talking about the future of book criticism with
former Washington Post book critic
Ron Charles. For decades, book critics helped decide which books broke through, which writers mattered, and what readers paid attention to. But that world might be changing. Reviewers don't seem to sell books the way they once did. Newspapers are shrinking their coverage, and readers are increasingly finding their books through Instagram, BookTok, and podcasts. So I want to ask today on the Book Biz segment, do book reviews still matter? And if critics no longer drive the conversation around books, who does? I am so excited to be joined today by Ron Charles. I mean, I don't know who else to ask these questions to in the world. He is a longtime book critic at the Washington Post. Ron, welcome to Check This Out.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really delighted to be here.
My folks live in New Hampshire. My dad was born and raised there. He still owns the farmhouse in Potter Place, New Hampshire, which is about 10 miles down from New London in Andover. We go up there every summer and spend a few weeks with them. There's a little covered bridge across the road from their house.
I love that. So as I said in the intro, for decades, the Washington Post or the New York Times could really shape a book's future. Is that still true?
Definitely not. The most recent thing that happened, of course, is the Washington Post closed its book section, so it's not commenting on books anymore. Of course, the Times still has a vibrant book section. The Wall Street Journal has a great book section. The LA Times, out in Chicago, there's a good book section. So critics are still out there. The New Yorker still reviews books. The London Review of Books. The Guardian has a great book section. It's still there, but you're definitely right. Most people are not making their buying decisions according to book reviews. But that doesn't mean they aren't important. I mean, they have had other utility besides that. I mean, they do contribute to the cultural conversation around books and big ideas. And if you think of books as that part of our culture which is most prepared, most stewed, most considered, we do need people to pay attention to them, because otherwise all we're paying attention to are the things that, you know, happened in the last 10 minutes.
I mean, I personally agree with you. I think that in-depth coverage and criticism of books is crucial to the overall conversations around the world. But if these sections are closing, like the Washington Post closed, right, their book coverage, and people aren't really reading it anymore, how are we still going to have that out there?
Well, its reach was never very wide, let's face it. The book review section was always, you know, the least read section of most papers. It was always something refined. It was always like live theater. You know, everyone's going to movies and sports, and then a few people go to live theater. That doesn't mean we shouldn't have live theater, or that doesn't serve any purpose. So I think it's easy to exaggerate the influence that book reviews once had and then mourn its loss. But they were always pretty niche, let's face it.
I don't know. I mean, so as someone who's published with Hachette, I've been in the traditional publishing industry. My novel Atomic Anna was on the cover of the New York Times Book Review, right? And it did, right, that coverage got me into a lot of conversations and a lot of people's hands that it would not have been in without that.
Yes.
Now, it wasn't enough to move the needle and make me write one of these super hot bestsellers, but it did do something for me.
Oh, it does do something, but the Times is pretty unique. In most markets, a good book review, you know, will only sell a few dozen copies, maybe a few hundred at tops. And as you noted of your own personal experience, that's not a way to wealth and early retirement. But there is still this whole group of people, and they include authors and publishers, who need to have a conversation about what's important, what's well done, what's schlock, and that will continue.
And how do you think that's going to continue in the future? Where are we going to see it?
There are the newspapers and magazines that I mentioned. It still goes on Goodreads. I mean, I'm really surprised. I go on Goodreads and there'll be some 800-word review by somebody who's, you know, anonymous or nobody ever heard of this person. And they've spent a lot of time crafting a very thoughtful, enthusiastic review. And I applaud that sort of democratization of book criticism that's taken place over the last 20 years. Because for a long time, you know, it was just a few people deciding, you know, what got attention. And now I think it's great that lots and lots of new people have entered that conversation. You mentioned BookTok. I mean, let's face it, Women have always been driving the fiction market since the beginning. They're doing it now again, young women on TikTok, what they like with their enthusiasm. I think that's a wonderful thing. And to denigrate it, one would be just sort of reenacting the same pejorative attitudes we had about women's tastes, you know, in the previous century or in the 19th century when Hawthorne talked about that, you know, that army of scribbling women. But these are the people that have always established the literary taste in our culture.
What I struggle with, I love that you're saying that, by the way, and recognizing it, because I think a lot of people don't. And a lot of people that I come into contact to in the literary world poo-poo a lot of Bookstagram. But the fact is that there are some very thoughtful ideas and criticisms on there. But I mean, I still go back to, I still love the traditional book review. For example, you reviewed Janet Edwards' book, Canticle, and she was on the show. And you did such a deep dive into that and helped me see it in ways that I hadn't thought about when she was on the show. And that conversation, I think, is important. But if people aren't reading print, and that trend continues, we're going to see more and more book reviews going out of print. How do we replace that? I mean, I keep coming back to this question because I don't want to see it happening.
Well, thank you, first of all. I'm glad you enjoyed that review. The day I was laid off, I moved to Substack, and I'm still doing exactly the same work on Substack. I have tens of thousands of readers. I still review a book every week, just as I did for the Post. I still write about publishing every Friday. There are these new platforms. A lot of us are moving on to them. We are finding audiences. It can still happen, but it's not going to be the way it was. And I agree, it's lovely to sit down on Sunday and have a book review laid out in a newspaper. But, you know, nobody under 65 gets a newspaper anymore. So it's silly to think that these things are going to be preserved if no one's going to buy it.
I find it so refreshing that you are so realistic, right, about this is what's happening.
Well, being laid off will make you realistic.
I guess it will, but there are still people in denial. And I just keep asking, like, what is the future of a literature class in a liberal arts college if we don't have a robust literary criticism machine out there?
That is a bigger and much more depressing question. I just read in the paper yesterday that one college a week is closing in America. You can bet the departments that are closing fastest are English, art history, philosophy, those sort of things. Yeah, that really does trouble me. And then we have to get into the effects of AI. And then, you know, by that time, I just want to go back to bed.
But at least we have your Substack. So we can at least be going back to that. I think, you know, publishing, just as criticism, right, traditional criticism is changing, publishing is also changing, right? It used to be that you would see the best books coming out of the Big Five or whoever, the traditional publishers. And now you see real space for indies and even self-publishing.
Right.
How is that playing a role in all of this?
It's tough because there are just too many books being published. The traditional publishers probably publish 65,000 books a year. The indie publishers, you know, another 100,000. The self-publishing, no one even knows. It could be as much as 4 million a year. These are just way too many books for the number of readers we've got in this country. So as the number of readers has slowly declined, steadily declined, the number of books being published keeps going up. I mean, we are reaching a point at which there are more people writing books than reading them. And that is really troubling to me. How do you find this issue of discoverability, which is the publisher's big challenge? How do you find a reader for that book which you have produced if no one's out there reading them and recommending them? Publishers should have much earlier spent time cultivating book reviews around the country. Instead, all they did was wring their hands, pour all their advertising dollars into the New York Times, and then throw up, you know, and mourn every time another book section around the country closed. Well, what did they think would happen?
Yeah. I mean, it is interesting, this question of discoverability. This show, Check This Out, is devoted to emerging writers, to finding new voices. And I get so many pitches a day.
Oh,
that I can't read them all. I must be missing some amazing books. And I always feel horrible when I do.
Yeah. And you get these pleas, right? I'm sure they say, well, if you just read one chapter. But if you're getting 400 pleas a day, each of them says, if you just read one chapter, it just cannot possibly be done. I mean, at the Post, we had a pretty good section. It was 9 people. You know, it's pretty, I think it was the second largest section of the country. But we couldn't deal with the self-published books. Were there good ones out there? Of course, I'm sure there were. You know, Walt Whitman was independently published. We can name all kinds of great books that were self-published, but how do you find them? And you can't take the author's word for them because no author has ever published a book that she didn't think was the best in the world. So how are you going to get through this pile?
If you're just joining us, I'm Rachel Barenbaum. You're listening to Check This Out on New Hampshire Public Radio, and we are talking to Ron Charles. That's right, the one and only Ron Charles, book reviewer, formerly of The Washington Post. We are touching on the subject of discoverability. And how do you, Ron, decide what books you're going to review on your new Substack?
That's changed considerably. At the Post, you know, I had my editors, I had my colleagues who would constantly be looking for me and diving into things and reading Publishers Weekly and Kirkus and getting pitches from publishers. And so they would feed me all this information and we would make, you know, intelligent choices about what was out there and what should be reviewed. We were reviewing about 20 books a week. But now that I'm on Substack every week, I'm just reviewing one book a week. And I have to, and it's my livelihood, I have to attract an audience. I cannot be as noble as I wanted to be at the Post. I have to review books that I know people are going to want to read about. And that does change the equation.
That makes a whole different kind of book review.
Yeah, exactly. Ann Patchett has a book coming out. I've got to review it. I love Ann Patchett. Most people do. You know, that's where I want to be, is where the conversation is. Can I go out and find, you know, new authors? Yeah, once in a while I can do that. But that can't be my bread and butter because there's no bread or butter there.
Yeah. I mean, I just feel like we are at an inflection point in publishing and criticism. And I guess I'm old enough now that I was, you know, I studied with those majors no one's studying anymore, literature, philosophy, art history. That was my core undergraduate education. Literature and philosophy was my major. You know, I don't want to see it going away. And I also recognize at the same time that I can't just fight the tide. Right? That if it is going away, I can't be the only person to say, no, no, no. Like at some point, I've got to get in and decide, well, how can I help change this course more towards what I want it to be like? And I find this to be so, I don't know, I'm not really sure what to do about that.
My hope is that this is cyclical, that we go in and out of moments of high culture and low culture, that with the closing of Book World at the Washington Post, other new forms will develop. For instance, the first time Book World closed about 10 years ago, Washington Independent Review was born, you know. And you can look at, say, the Paris Review and other things that popped up in answer to a perceived need. And I think that will continue to happen. And there will always be a high culture. There will always be thoughtful people. There will always be great books. It's just that the unusual thing now is that there are so many books. And that is historically unique.
Yeah.
We did not used to publish 4 million books a year. That's crazy.
Right. But at the same time, I love Book Talk and Bookstagram. I mean, it is so much fun to see people getting on there. And they love the books that they post.
Yeah. And what's wrong with that? I mean, why did enthusiasm get such a bad reputation in book criticism? I mean, I've been made fun of, and I don't mind. But, you know, I like to recommend books. I like to find books that I love, and I like to tell people I love them, and I hope that other people love them too. And that seems to me like a perfectly legitimate kind of criticism that I do. I also respect other kinds of criticism that are, you know, perhaps a little more thoughtful or less enthusiastic. That's fine. But I think we can have a whole spectrum of tones and approaches to books. And, you know, they are largely young women, expressing their enthusiasms for books. I think that's a great thing. I mean, look at this culture and the way reading seems to be fading away as, you know, other kinds of entertainment take over. Why shouldn't we celebrate young people who are literally crying over a book that they loved and were moved by?
Yes, but I want to push back on that because I don't think reading is fading away. I mean, look at all of the readers on Bookstagram and look at all of the money, the advertising, the right. The publishers are trying to go in there and they're trying to snap up the those writers, right? And then we see them on the bestseller list. H.M. Wolfe, who wrote Daggermouth, was a guest. She was scooped up in a seven-figure deal after selling over 30,000 copies of her own book in self-publishing and going through Bookstagram.
That is fantastic. And that, of course, is the rock star moments that all authors dream of.
Yes, yes. It almost never happens.
No.
And yet we have this reader-propelled success and this book just selling so many copies.
Yeah, but, and I don't want to be the downer here, but the National Endowment for the Arts does do, you know, pretty rigorous polling and collects data about how much people are reading. I think they do it every 5 or 10 years. And it's, you know, it's down, 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 down.
No. I'm sticking to Bookstagram and I'm believing that there are more people reading. So lots of people talk about Amazon and the algorithm and how that, you know, is a great way to find new books. And it's always recommending books. And I am dying to ask you, Ron Charles, formerly of The Washington Post, what is it that a critic or a book section can do that that algorithm cannot do for people looking for a book to read?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's not a good way to find books to read because, I mean, look, I remember making fun of that years ago because every time I went on Amazon, it told me to read The Kite Runner. No matter what I was looking for, The Kite Runner, The Kite Runner. You know, it's just the tyranny of the bestseller list all over again, right? You get on that list, it's very sticky, you never fall off, it crowds out other books. So this is a real benefit of book reviews, is that they can push your taste beyond that list, beyond the algorithm, beyond that stack of, you know, recommended new fiction when you walk into Barnes & Noble. And I don't blame people. I mean, you go into a Barnes & Noble, what, there are maybe 65,000 titles there? Of course, your first reaction is just to be completely overwhelmed. And so you just go to the greeting cards or the puzzles because you just can't imagine wandering through this enormous store. So I love the idea of book reviews being able to push people gently toward adjacent tastes, things that, you know, are not so bizarre that they will just shut down and stop reading, but are just close enough to their taste to push them into something new. That's what a great book review can do.
If you're just joining me, I'm Rachel Barenbaum. You're listening to Check This Out on New Hampshire Public Radio, and I am talking to Ron Charles, book critic. Ron, 10 years from now, how and where will readers discover books? Look into your crystal ball for me.
10 years from now.
10 years. What's your prediction?
Boy, that is wild. I do think we're going to see another substantial book section because I've talked to people about it. I know plans are in the works in different parts of the industry. So I do think there'll be another attempt.
You mean at a major newspaper?
Or magazine. I don't know how social media will evolve. It's so toxic now. I just, and book talk could fade into something else. I really, it's hard to imagine. 10 years ago, I never would have imagined this, right? I couldn't have imagined that I'd be working on writing every week on Substack. So I think 10 years is just too far.
So my big question for you then is authority shifting in the book criticism world?
Oh gosh, yes. As it should, right? I mean, not too long ago when I was in college, all we did was read books by white guys named John. Yes, we really, that was long overdue. And that happened, you know, thankfully, a couple decades ago. Now all kinds of people tell their stories. People of all races, people around the world, people of different backgrounds, different classes. We just have a much, much richer literature than we did before. That's a great thing. I mean, it's a rich, diverse country.
Ron Charles, thank you so much for joining me here on Check This Out.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure to talk to you.
I'm Rachel Barenbaum, author of the novels A Bend in the Stars and Atomic Anna. You have been listening to Check This Out, a show where I get to do one of my favorite things in the world, talk to other writers about their brand new books. Check This Out is a partnership between New Hampshire Public Radio and the Penn Faulkner Foundation. I'll be back next week with another new author you should not miss. Our producer is Jessica Hunt. NHPR's program director is Emily Quirk. Our partner, the Penn Faulkner Foundation's mission is to champion the breadth and power of fiction in America. The show is sponsored by C&S Wholesale Grocers Family of Companies, the podcast Totally Booked with Zibby and Zibby's Bookshop, and the Jack and Dorothy Byrne Foundation. Remember to go to your local library or bookstore and check out all the books we're talking about this season. Thank you so much for listening. Read on.